Welcome to the Compact Camera Podcast. It's bright, it's breezy, it's to the point. So grab yourself a coffee and come and join us for some photo talk. I can hardly even believe this. I can welcome you to the second episode of the Compact Camera Podcast. It's only thanks to your very generous and perceptive feedback and suggestions after episode one that we can carry on confidently with another episode. Who knows where this is going to take us? And if you're new, thank you very much for joining us. We hope to keep you entertained and informed. So coming up in this episode. Starting a photo conversation. More opportunities to get your work shown and published. And an important chat with Sean from The Black Gaze. Now, like many places around the world, here in Wales, we're under quite a strict lockdown again, obviously. We can travel for essential reasons, including travelling to a place of work if you can't work from home. We're allowed unlimited exercise, though, but that has to begin and end on our front doorstep. So for me personally, photography opportunities are a little bit more limited than usual, which is why I've decided to engage in podcasting. It's a way of reaching out to our very close and friendly supportive community, both people I've met online and in real life. If you fancy trying a podcast yourself, do please get in touch. I'm very happy to point you in the right directions of how to get started. It's not that daunting, and you probably have all the equipment you need to do that already. Now, one great and fun way to grow your practice and learn about the way other photographers work is through a photo conversation, and I'm a great fan of this. I did exactly this last spring and summer with German photographer Christina Stone, based in the Black Forest. Now, there was a website and a project called the Stay at Home Photography Project, and it's still available. There's a link in the episode description, stayathome.photography. The website would pair off photographers to enter into a photo conversation. Now, what exactly does that mean? Well, myself and Christina, we used new images under lockdown conditions. You could also use archive images, but basically the idea is one image is a question and the other is an answer. They pair off together. The connections between the two pictures can be that of narrative, visual content. It can be as tenuous as you like. In fact, I found on the website some of the best pairings were really quite abstract, so you had to work to find the connection between two of the pictures. And you don't even need an elegant, sophisticated website to show the results. In fact, it's so easy. I'll give you an example. I'm part of the North Wales Project. We're a collective of documentary photographers in North Wales. And we teamed up with a basement collective in Swansea, another team of photographers working across a wider range of genres. So to get to know each other a little bit better, we decided to have a fun, informal photo conversation. We formed a WhatsApp group and we would contribute pictures we'd taken, either bespoke to ask a question or as a response to other people's pictures. These were taken on mobile phones, they were from ordinary cameras and also archive material. Some of these paired up extraordinarily well. So what I did was download a very simple free app, Adobe Spark, for my phone. I think it's available for iPhone and Android. And you can export your own constructed diptych in a square frame, for example, perfectly ready for Instagram. So we started an account called Collective Effort. There's a link in the episode guide and you can see what we did there. So why not put out a call on social media, for example, on Twitter or on your Instagram story or on Facebook, or go through your phone list and call a buddy down the road and get involved in a photo conversation. It's an amazing way to grow. It's an amazing way to actually think a little bit differently and examine the relationship between images. In episode one, we looked at current calls for entry for you, and we also try to encourage those of you who are not already working in terms of series or projects and what the advantages are, including having ready-made packages to submit for calls for entry. We're starting at the top end of that this week with an opportunity from Another Place Press. It's an ongoing opportunity that's been around for a little while, but well worth looking at and aspiring to. Now, another place press is run by Ian Sargent, himself an excellent photographer. His work, his own work, and another place press concerns work, and it says in the website, that explores relationship with place, in inverted commas. And again, with calls for entry, it's well worth looking at the originator's website or work that they featured before to get a feel for what they're looking for and what a good fit is. And you can take a look at work by photographers like Amy Romer, Robert Darch, Dan Wood, Nicholas White, and Brian David Stevens, amongst many, many others who've been published by AP. Now, normally Ian will not take submissions or pitches for ideas for books. He works a little bit differently. He does his own research and he will invite photographers whose work he can relate to work with him to publish books. Now, this is great because then you have a publisher completely dedicated towards the same sort of goals, the same vision as yourself. I'm sure that works extremely well for both parties. That changed a little bit last year when Ian introduced a new series of zines. Well, they're called zines, but knowing how zines are these days, they're more like small books, I'm sure. Very, very high quality. They're called Field Notes. They're up to 21 editions already, and the price point is around about £8, I seem to remember. There's still an ongoing open call, and I put a link to Field Notes with another place press in the episode guide. So have a look, do some research, and it is important in this case you do some fairly detailed research on what they're looking for, and please do apply. Best of luck to you. You may want to take a look at the US-based website and Instagram account of the Humble Arts Foundation. They have regular ongoing submission opportunities. Their Instagram account has over 46,000 followers, so it's not guaranteed you're going to get your work featured, but just imagine the buzz if you do. And as I said, simply looking at your work, particularly digging into your archive, curating your own work, is a lovely process, and under lockdown, especially so. Interestingly, though, they say our open calls are not juried exhibitions, contests, or competitions. They're opportunities to get your work seen and curated around a specific idea, and that's exactly what we support in the Compact Camera podcast. We've already mentioned there's a little bit too much monetization in photographic competitions. Do avoid them like the plague. They're there to make money out of you and nothing else. And when you see an extended deadline, you just know they're just wanting to grab a little bit more money. Anyway, back to the Humble Arts Foundation. I'll step off my soapbox, of course. Current open call, they say, nothing formal, but we'd love to see your weird, dark, dim, yes, it does say that, inducing winter photographs. The darker and stranger, the better. Tag them hashtag darkweirdwinter on Instagram, and we'll share them from time to time all winter long. Sounds like fun, and I'm sure there are plenty of opportunities for you to get out there and actually take something. And again, don't be put off. You could use your mobile phone. I'm sure that would be just good enough, or a film camera, digital camera, anything will go. It's all about the image and not about the equipment. Good luck with that one. And finally, you may want to take a look at allcitiesarebeautiful.com. That's a website and an Instagram account. And as the name suggests, they're into their urban contemporary photography. Actually, I will have to read you the website description. Get this, okay? Acting as a mediator by combining a theoretical and practical approach to the subject matter of cities, urban culture, and day-to-day living in close conjunction with contemporary standards and practices, allcitiesarebeautiful.com unequivocally propagates a holistic and dialectical methodology as its universal leitmotif. And that's spelled L-E-I-T-M-O-T-I-F. And if you know what that means, kudos to you. I'll be heading straight to Google after this podcast. Needless to say, they're into contemporary urban photography. That's the built environment and people within it. There you go, I've decoded that for you, no charge. But the great thing is they'll take submissions in various forms. Obviously, photographic work, they will take photo essays, single images, full series via email. Interestingly, also texts of all kinds, essays, poems, random thought collections, short stories, again by email. They will also consider physical submissions of books, prints, postcards, and zines. So plenty to think about, but even if you don't submit, do take a look at their Instagram account and website. Some inspiring work definitely being shown there. Now, just a quick note to thank all of you that have been in touch with us following our item about Dan Wood and his new book, Black Was the River You See. A lot of you have suggested that we reach out to Dan and invite him for an interview, and of course we'd love to do that. We're not going to do that just yet because Dan has provided recently a very lengthy and in-depth and insightful interview with Offline Journal. The interviewers are Brian Carroll of Photon and Offline Journal and Ellie Hopkins of Stirling University. We've left a link in the episode guide for you. We've been looking forward all week to welcoming Sean Connell to the Compact Camera Podcast. Sean's a Yorkshire-based photographer and founded the website The Black Gaze, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But Sean, thanks for joining us first.
Rob, it's great to be here. Thank you for your invitation.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Listen, on your Twitter handle, you've got the flags of Barbados, Jamaica, and the Union flag. So tell us about different layers of your identity.
Oh, goodness. That is a real challenge to get it in as succinctly, but let me have a go.
Well, would it be Yorkshire first?
I would say so.
I would say so.
Bradford lad, born and bred. Some people say strong in body, thick in head, but you know, that's not one idea that I go along with. But definitely, yeah, Yorkshire, Bradford in particular, and even a particular part of Bradford is what I call home. I definitely see myself as English as well as Yorkshire. I have, as the flags show, I have Jamaican and Barbadian heritage. Mum's family is from Jamaica, dad's family is from Barbados. And if you go back far enough, you'll actually find Irish mercenaries in the family.
Wow, that's incredible. Hence the surname Connell, of course. And you know, I think that's a sort of the same thing that goes for society. I'm proud of my Welsh heritage. I've got English heritage, Welsh heritage. We've got our own language here, which I speak. And when I see people who can draw from several cultures, that's enriching, isn't it? Why don't people get that society as a whole, we're made stronger, aren't we, by having all this rich variety?
I believe so. I believe we are. I think going back to when I was a child, so way before I lifted up a camera with any purpose. You know, I can remember kids in my neighbourhood cycling past me and shouting obscenities at me. And I was thinking to myself, but you know what, mate? In many respects, you're not really that different from me. And ultimately, you know, when I used to go to school and kick footballs in the playground and study in the classrooms, even in the history lessons, Rob, it was clear to me that there was something different about how I saw things. You know, so history classes, because we're in Yorkshire, mill area, cotton industry, We would learn the history of industrialization in England. And of course, ultimately, you trace that back to the Americas for the supply of cotton, to the Caribbean for the supply of sugar. And I could just take that history that we were learning in classroom and just fit something else on top of it. And quite often, what I found was when I was shown who my people are, so to speak, I was very much don't recognise that.
So, Sean, in your experience, apart from the obvious racial problems that this country's faced and things hugely highlighted by the Black Lives Matter movement recently, on a daily basis, there must be so many things that maybe people like me, people like my friends, don't notice that must grind you down or irk you on a daily basis. Do you understand what I mean?
Definitely. I guess they're referred to as microaggressions. So as you say, those little comments that, you know, it's almost they're said tongue in cheek or jokingly, but there's something a bit more to them than that. And I find that happens just in every walk of life. It happens an awful lot in workplaces. And unfortunately, Rob, it happens in photography. And that's, for me, the real sad bit.
How are Black people's photographs and the way they see things, how are they informed by their own personal experience and you by your own personal experience as well?
Well, I think if we refer to the great Gordon Parks, you see his passion, you see his anger, his frustration in many of the great works that we all celebrate today. And they ultimately come from the fact that as he is looking at his subjects, the people he's collaborating with, he sees himself. And I think that is where the difference lies, Rob, that when I'm taking a photograph of somebody else who's Black, there's a reflection coming back at me that wouldn't necessarily come back to other non-Black photographers.
Right. And of course, this is all against the backdrop of a massive, very powerful white cultural Western European narrative, isn't it? I mean, this is just everywhere. So this needs to be redressed.
Well, that really was the starting point for the Black gaze, because really, I think there's an element in photography, we're talking documentary, photojournalism, that is very much a canon of white Western vision. And as I've said earlier, when I look at some of the work, I just don't see myself represented. I see a Black person or Black people, but I see them represented in ways that I would never represent them if I was sent that assignment.
Yeah, that's really a very good point. I totally get that. And this leads me on to what I was going to talk about. There's like a huge underrepresentation of Black people and generally all sorts of diversity. We're missing that in the arts generally and presumably in the jobs market as well.
Absolutely, Rob. Myself and a few peers often talk about parachuting photojournalists. So when National Geographic want to shoot a story in Africa, they usually send somebody from the West. Why not send somebody who's local? There is no difference in the quality of work that's produced. Somebody who's local saves cost, but it seems to be that the only time that they're employed is when we're in this COVID environment that we're in now. So it's impossible for Western photographers to get to specific locations.
You'd think it'd be a no-brainer, wouldn't you, Sean, to be quite honest? I mean, like you said, local knowledge, capable people on the ground. I mean, I just don't get why that hasn't been the case. To me, it's like having eight people in a football team on the pitch. If you don't include everybody and all the variety and talent available to you, you're on the back foot, aren't you?
Yes. Rob, good that you posed the question in terms of football, because that's my sport, that's my thing. And I can go back to my I'm 50 now. I can go back to my childhood when I was 7 to 10, when I looked at all the different football teams, Black players were rare, extremely, extremely rare. And I believe that's mirrored in the photography industry. At the moment, those big assignments, those key assignments, those special assignments, they don't go to Black people. Ultimately, I think, give us, because we will make the change, give us 1-2 decades, you're going to see the same changes in photography, or some of them, as you have seen in professional sports in this country.
Well, I hope the penny drops, and I hope people realise that we all lose if we don't take advantage of all our team players. You know, we're not going to get to the top of the league.
Absolutely. And Rob, I think there's one other thing to consider here, and it's all about the insider voice and the outsider voice. Drop me in certain situations, I'm the insider. There's things that are happening that I can read differently to somebody else. And I believe that the power of storytelling, which we all do in one way or another, requires that addition to the narrative. At the moment, what we have is a legacy of decades of storytelling from a very specific point of view. And as you see the new generation of black photographers coming up now, and those are the kind of photographers we want to feature on The Black Gaze, you're seeing other things woven in to the tapestry of storytelling. It can only be a good thing for everybody.
Brilliant. And a big part of your website is a Q&A session with various black photographers. And the first question you ask them is, what is the black gaze? Which is a really interesting question. And there are loads of interpretations. Did you detect any common theme or a common thread from all those responses?
Yes. And so today we posted Rachel Sidhu, who is one of my favourite new school photographers. I can tell you she's one to watch. Her work is absolutely brilliant. It doesn't pack the punch that immediate punch that some like to see, but it has this slow growing aura about it that really, you've got to take time with it.
And I like the sound of that.
And taking the time with her work just really, it just cuts beneath the stereotypes. And I think that's the key, Rob. When we're looking at the black gaze, one of the things that we're talking about is moving beyond the stereotypes.
But I want to get people just to look at your website, Sean, because there's just some really good photography there, isn't there?
Yes, and the good thing is it's photography that's coming from all sides of the world. It's different genres. It's coming from people of different genders. It is absolutely fantastic. And just going back to the work that I mentioned from Rachel, one of the things that she says is that the black gaze is all about the stories she lives. She says she is those stories, so she uses her camera to tell those stories. And one of the big things that I really enjoy about the black gaze is when I get responses in from a photographer who's just answered the Q&A. And really, Rob, we've got a stack still to publish, and each one just makes me smile, makes me dance. Some of them have even brought me to tears.
Oh, that's so nice. I mean, and the next stage, you're forming a directory of black photographers, aren't you, as well? Are you going to be able to reach out to editors and people who are commissioning work as well with that?
That's the plan. That's a twofold thing. First of all, just giving visibility to black British photographers. Again, visibility is important. Visibility and representation is very important. And I still think that there's a lack of visibility and a lack of underrepresentation in work that's shared. And that's really, for me, even when you look on YouTube and blogs, with regards to photography, it's rare that we're talking about a black photographer pretty much other than Gordon Parks. And Gordon Parks really was the exception to the norm. Even today, he would not be the norm. And what I'm trying to do with The Black Gaze is showcase all the different norms with regards to black photography. There are many. And hopefully, in time, as you've mentioned, editors, commissioners can come to rely on us as a source for finding out who to go to.
So having listened to our chat, Sean, what can photographers in general do a little bit more to support diverse photographers in our, well, they call it photo land, don't they? I don't like that expression, but in our little world, in our community.
Great question, Rob. I would say it starts with recognizing that our passion, our photography, is not as inclusive as one might think. So it helps just to amplify black photographers, female photographers, photographers from all different backgrounds. What tends to happen is certain photographers, as you know, if we were talking street photography, Cartier, Bresson, Klein are just two of many names that would come up. Just sprinkle in some other names and just add, as you said earlier, it's all about layers. And just by adding the other names, we're just layering the different perspectives, the different views that all photographers bring to the table.
Exactly. Well, I want to encourage everybody who's listened to this to take a look at the website and look at some great photography and just absorb this wonderful facet of culture into our own photography world. And that's the best way I can put it, I think. But Sean, thank you so much for joining us. It's been fascinating talking to you. Wish we could carry on for another 15 minutes or so. It'd be wonderful. But thanks so much, mate.
Rob, you are more than welcome. It's been an absolute pleasure. And once again, just as you have done, I would encourage people to visit the Black Gaze website, www.theblkgaze.com.
We'll definitely be leaving a link in the description.
Thank you.
What a great way to end another compact camera podcast. Actually, Sean and I carried on talking for quite a long time after we stopped recording. But it's time for us to go, and hopefully we will have episode 3 out in a week's time. I hope you can join us again. My name's Rob, and thank you again for joining us on the Compact Camera Podcast.